You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
A couple of reporters from the Olympics, Stugatz, and we have been remiss in not bringing this up yet because it is, and I don't care what anyone says about the world catching up, it is surprising to see our USA basketball team filled with all-stars losing this way. And I know Greg Popovich wants us to celebrate the French, Evan Fournier, free agent. To be Evan Fournier and Rudy Gobert and Nicholas Batum. And I understand what he is saying every time he says it disrespects the world to expect us to just go out there and blow everyone out. But we have the best players. We have the most all-stars. We have the most accomplished coach. And it is surprising to see them lose this much. Lose this way, no matter what it is that you think about international rules, handcuffing, the kind of athleticism that our guys have that the other teams simply don't have, even though Luka's line yesterday was ridiculous. Stu got 48, 11, and 5 in 31 minutes on 62% shooting.
Yep.
The world has caught up in a way that I believe is super surprising, even as Popovich tells us to quit being surprised. But the headline on Dan Wolkin's column in USA Today after this loss was, time to face facts, NBA coaching legend Greg Popovich stinks at Olympic basketball. And Joe Vardon is writing, to be clear, Popovich is horrified by his own record coaching this team. He dwells on it and hates the losing. The players are frustrated too, grumbling on their way back to the locker room about, quote, running the San Antonio offense when apparently they feel like there are better ideas. And Pop has said, because of the truncated nature of Team USA's training camp, the offense would be based on concepts instead of set plays.
I don't care what the players have to say, Dan. I really don't. It just doesn't matter to me. It doesn't hold weight. Listen, that offense was good enough to have them up double digits late in that game and up seven with, I think, 3 or 4 minutes to go. And they couldn't put that team away. They have Kevin Durant. They have Damian Lillard. They have some of the best players in the world. They have a really, really good team, despite having JaVale McGee on that team. But they have a really good team. I don't want to hear from the players. I don't care what offense you're running. I don't care who your coach is. I don't care what's going on. You're up double digits against an inferior team. Put the game away. I don't want to hear from them.
Okay, you said that four times, and you didn't hear from players. I was quoting writers. There weren't players saying anything.
I don't want to hear the reports that players are frustrated with Greg Popovich. But you didn't put the game away.
But you didn't hear. Okay, you didn't hear. That's right. Just fix it.
Dan, I don't care if I'm coaching, you're coaching, Witty's coaching. I don't care who's coaching that team. When you're up double digits on the French in the second half of an Olympic game, put the game away. That's it.
Thank you, Stugatz.
That offense was fine to get him up double digits.
Okay, you mentioned all this. I would like to explore the next step beyond the easy stance of how embarrassing it is that our basketball team is losing more games than it ever has in this tournament. The thing that I think is so... is I believe Popovich's Olympic winning percentage is worse than his San Antonio Spurs winning percentage. And all of the dismissive, the condescension when reporters ask you questions, the grumpiness.
Right.
Whole hell of a lot less charming.
When you're not winning?
When you're looking like you have the clearly best players and you're not winning.
Right.
When your smarts aren't doing anything, when we know you have the best dudes. Like, we're watching and we know who those guys are, and what they are is not Evan Fournier. It's Kevin Durant out there looking ineffective out of nowhere.
Right.
But Damian Lillard was bad. Tatum was bad.
Yep. I mean, they had many open shots at the end of that game, wide open threes that could have won the game, and they missed it. That has not, all I'm saying, Dan, that has nothing to do with an offense. That has to do with those guys missing big shots. That's it.
Doesn't it feel like they're just kind of exhausted after this protracted NBA season where everyone got hurt and went all the way until July? They didn't really get a long break.
Make sense if Jrue Holiday wasn't so good in the fourth, in the second half of that game.
But you know, also, Batum played late into the season. I mean, everyone's dealing with the same stuff. Fournier,
that's true. I guess
Gobert did too.
Yeah, I just don't know if I'm a Team USA Olympian going through the bubble and then the season, if I really am like super invested in winning a gold medal.
I will say, like, to Greg Popovich's point, we should credit, like, these international teams always have the benefit of, there's no doubt as to who's getting picked into a French national team. You pick whatever you have, and those guys play together a lot at international tournaments, whereas the U.S. just show up at every tournament having thrown together a team 3 weeks before, and it has more talent, but, like, you're going against teams that have been together for years as opposed to teams that have been together for weeks, and that has an impact.
If you're going all the way to Tokyo, though, right, with everything that's going on and how unpleasant this is, wouldn't you want to go out there and win and dominate instead of just going there and, like, losing, having... Yeah, why would you put yourself through all of that?
I reject Jessica's premise that they're not invested. They're playing for free. They could be on vacation. If they want to go do something that is not invested, they could go to Cancun, they could go on vacation, they could go anywhere that isn't Tokyo during a pandemic for an Olympics that probably shouldn't be going on, so that they could get the embarrassment and shame of being the worst team in the history of USA basketball.
Which do you think has been more embarrassing for Kevin Durant? The way that these games have gone, or Team USA singing him happy birthday not on his birthday? He looked so angry, and he looks like the guy in every group of friends that, like, you'll go to Chili's and every time you go, you'll tell them, hey, it's my friend's birthday. Come bring him a cake, sing him a happy birthday, just so that he'll get super embarrassed and upset at you the whole time. Because his birthday's in September, I think. And they were all singing him happy birthday, and he was just looking around, pissed off at Draymond Green and at Bam and at everyone else, who's, I guess, he doesn't want attention, but they were all giving it to him.
Put it on the poll. Who have you seen roar with laughter that is joyous less, Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant? Because when you said he looked angry, I'm like, how is that any different than he always looks? He looks like he's someone who's not terribly happy.
We all agree, though, if Team USA does not win the gold medal, it's Coach K's fault. I mean, cowardly decision not to coach this team. Go full retirement.
Coach K's fault?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand where she's going. Yeah. It's a good take. It is. I mean, I'll put it on Kevin Durant, but you can go Coach K. That's certainly one of them.
Yeah.
Greg Popovich can't do the job?
No.
I would figure, like,
no,
who do you imagine is the, like, among the bottom NBA coaches at the moment? Whoever that person is. Should be able to lead the United States to Olympic gold.
Witty, Coach K, he's used to coaching amateurs, people without egos, and he brings everyone together and gets them to play with one another, and that's how he's become such a great Team USA basketball coach. And then he just retired and said, Pop, you do it. Yeah. Like, come on.
If Randy Whitman were coaching...
Excellent example.
This
excellent.
USA team right now.
We'd Scott Brooks.
We'd be blaming Randy Whitman for how it is that they look, but we can't. Like, it's Popovich. Like, what are we supposed to do? This can't be coaching. Whatever the difference you think is between Coach K and Popovich, it can't be that much.
You think after these losses, Monty Williams is like, I need to board a plane and go talk to this team. Really get them in the right frame of mind.
Show them how to do it.
How is this going to go with Amin in Milwaukee after getting dragged for calling Monty Williams, look at me, Louie?
I got to be honest with you. The fact that we're involved in this in one way and none of us knew this was going on doesn't bode well for Milwaukee knowing this is going on when Amin shows up there.
Oh, but we have organizational problems and we have communication problems and we have people in New York and we have people here and we don't, I mean, we are a, Stugatz didn't know Eric Bledsoe wasn't in the finals. Like nobody
still
knows,
shocked,
nobody
I mean.
Knows anything around here. Nobody talks. We're just sort of floating around drifting. And next thing you know, Amin is in a dunk tank. And I do believe we're going to have to do this twice. We're going to have to, he's getting dragged on two fronts. He's getting dragged on the Milwaukee take and he's getting dragged on the Monty Williams take. So he has made both teams angry that we're in the finals.
I don't think people that listen to the show realize like, there's no like pre-production meetings. Like we just go. Like I started not that long ago, and you're right, Dan. No one talks. We just like do a show, and then we move on. Stugatz doesn't go to any of the meetings, and that's it.
We have meetings.
I want to ask you guys something that has been bothering me around South Beach as it gets more and more crowded, Stugatz, because you have a lot of people moving to South Florida as the country finds itself in upheaval. I don't know if you've been reading at all near you what is happening in Palm Beach, but there were 22 sales in Palm Beach real estate here recently.
Mm-hmm.
Since March of 2020, 22 sales of homes for more than $40 million.
Wow.
One buyer paid $26 million in January and sold it in June for $42 million. So a whole lot of people are moving to South Florida and it's getting more and more crowded. And my question to you is because of how small South Beach actually is. And because one of my great pet peeves is that Uber drivers think that they can just stop wherever it is.
Wherever they want.
They want to. But with the proliferation, the combination of Uber drivers with another set of people that park wherever they want in a city that doesn't have a lot of parking, should Amazon trucks be able to park wherever it is that they want to park? Because they do. And I'm asking you, since everyone is using Amazon and it feels a bit like a public service, and you can't ask these drivers if you want your packages to go spend, you know, hours trying to find parking, should Amazon truck drivers be able, as they're doing, whether we allow them or not, to just park wherever they want and put their hazards on and say, I'm just going to be here in the street and this is how I'm going to do it. And I don't care that the traffic it causes.
I believe they should. I am totally with you on Uber drivers. It drives me crazy. It used to take me 5 minutes to get out of here. It takes me like 25 minutes to get out of here sometimes simply because they stop wherever they want. They're dropping people
on. That can't be true.
I enhanced it by at least 15 minutes.
It can't be true that it adds 20 minutes to your drive because
70 seconds
you are
tops.
Slalom coursing through Uber
better.
Drivers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ridiculous what you're
doing
saying.
It for effect. You know,
okay, that's but what, it seems ridiculous to add 25 minutes to
it
a drive because you simply, because Uber drivers are just stacked
it's
on top of each other
minute,
getting in
with
your
you.
Way.
mean,
put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Le Batard Show, please. Should Amazon truck drivers be able to park wherever they want? Because they're doing it whether you want them to or not.
But when I order from Amazon, I want my package desperately from Amazon. And if that means if I lived in a city that the Amazon driver and truck has to park where it has to park to get me my package, I'm good with it. I am totally fine with that. That's an exception. I'm not certain there are many other exceptions in terms of parking wherever you want, whenever you want, but that would be one for me.
Now, are you kind of objecting because Amazon trucks are new to this? Amazon used to send all their packages out with the USPS and with FedEx and UPS, but they just kind of realized, oh, we can get in the shipping business too. So did you have an issue with UPS trucks pulling up to the front of places, or is it just because Amazon is new to this game?
It's the proliferation. It's not the new to the game. It's how many of these trucks there are. It's how often I'm seeing it and how often their cold metallic colors make me feel like I'm in communist Russia when I live in paradise. And just we are mass producing these trucks that are just made of this color and cost us $9 to make, and they're giant and they're filled with packages, and Bezos is using all that money to launch himself into space so he could live up there when the floods and the fire consume the rest of us.
That being said, how many Amazon packages did you get to your apartment this weekend?
Yes, I mean, my wife buries me in Amazon packages. That is correct. I am worried about everything that we're doing to the environment at all points with just the sheer number of packages that we're sending everywhere and the sheer number of boxes that we're trying to recycle, but I believe that we're throwing into the ocean.
Have you arrived at a point where you get home, there's a couple of Amazon packages outside the door, you start rolling your eyes? Have you said anything to your wife yet? Have you done anything in that regard? Because Dan, it's a dangerous game. I'm warning you, like, don't do it. I do it all the time. I'm like, what's going on? How many boxes today? Can we go a single day without getting boxes? And then she opens it up and it's paper towels that I need, you know?
I am marveling at just a couple of things that are... What, Billy?
Why do you order paper towels on Amazon?
She orders everything on Amazon. It's crazy.
A lot of Amazon Fresh. You don't have to do grocery shopping. Yeah. Just have it all delivered. You can have it like recurring deliveries, or like, I probably need paper towels once every 3 weeks, and they just show up once
and
every three
Amazon
weeks.
Is cheaper than everything else. It's cheaper. It's you are now he the reason Bezos is so rich is because he has rigged the system and made it more convenient and cheaper for you to get everything from your computer than going out and having to purchase it. But there are a couple of things here that have changed so quickly in the last, I don't know, just a few years, Stugatz, that despite how crowded, I'm telling you, South Florida is with people rushing down here to buy real estate, I went to see at the theater, and it's a giant theater.
Right.
Anthony Bourdain's documentary the other day, and the theater, I had it to myself. It was like a zombie apocalypse, because the convenience of doing these things from home, whether it's your groceries or getting your packages or streaming movies and having it be cheaper on your couch or on your bed than having to get up and go do it. I liked having the theater to myself. I want to now go treat this giant playground. So, guys, there wasn't even anyone at the box office. I had to go to the concession stand in order to buy my tickets in a giant...
You were headed there anyway, though.
...sprawling theater. You were very eager to get that joke in there, as if... You were so...
Sorry.
You're not
mean.
Sorry. I mean, you're not sorry. You were so pleased with yourself.
Terrible, I mean.
You were so happy with yourself.
While you were there, though, two birds, one stone.
Yeah.
The popcorn, I can't help myself with the popcorn.
Overpriced popcorn, yeah.
But I had to go to the concession stand to buy the tickets because they've removed the need for a box office because there's no one there. And it's a giant sprawling piece of real estate. This is a piece of real estate that would cost hundreds of millions of dollars where it is. They cannot pay for themselves with the amount of popcorn I'm buying. Close. But they can't.
Is that something that's going to come back, though? I'm wondering. Like, sports stadiums are filled now, right? Like, the movie theaters are going to be filled again at some point, no?
I don't know, but it's the reason I'm bringing up the question, because things are changing so fast. And while I liked it, I'm like, this is not a sustainable business model for movie theaters. The movies are going to be fine because we're in the content golden age. But this is, I'm telling you, this might be a $1 billion movie theater real estate property where it is. And there were four people there, and one of them was a concessioneer.
I've thought that when you see all these businesses closing on Ocean Drive and on South Beach, there's two bikini stores right across the street from the garage that nothing will take them down. And it's, I guess people want to keep buying bikinis, and that's definitely what's going on
that
there.
That is not, you cannot pay for that rent with bikinis. Those are clearly drug laundering or money laundering places. Like all of these places
Kidding
on
me?
The beach that have the wood up, those are places that weren't laundering the money. All of the, but this does feel like a zombie apocalypse out here. I'm curious how Jessica, who's just arrived here, she just moved her life from New York to Miami. This used to be a vibrant place, and it feels right now like it is filled with zombies. That this is what it would look like in The Walking Dead, what's happening around here. With everything is sheltered. You don't know. It feels like you can't get supplies.
I mean, you guys weren't kidding about the smell in that parking garage either. Good God.
On a Monday, too.
So there's no one here,
way to wake up on a Monday.
The smell of urine still is here. There's no one actually physically here, but the smell of urine lingers. What do you guys think of where movie theaters are going to end up if I'm walking through for a movie I assume is going to be pretty popular and that people want to see and is just
when
released?
When did you go?
Like, and is it available? It was a Friday, early evening on a Friday.
I'd normally be crowded, right?
I mean, it normally wouldn't be totally empty.
Right.
The theaters themselves have been being screwed out of money by the studios for decades, though. This is kind of just the culmination of that. Like, the actual theaters only make money off of the concessions and off of, like, the fourth week of a run of a film. So they're not making any money off of you seeing the first week's release of the Anthony Bourdain documentary anyways. And if the movie studios decide that they care about theaters, then something will change. But if they decide that they want all of their movies to be released via streaming because that's how you generate the most buzz the quickest and get your film seen by Americans, then they'll do that.
Isn't that what's about to happen, though, if it hasn't already? As Martin Scorsese complains, okay, I don't know when this started. I discovered it with True Detective, the first season, where I was surprised to see McConaughey and Woody Harrelson on what was a smaller screen because it had been for many years, for decades. Martin Scorsese's talking about the film experience. But of course, these actors would say, wait a minute, you're telling me that quicker I can make 8 episodes of something or 10 episodes and make a 10-hour movie that I get the fulfillment of quicker than waiting 2 years to see it on the big screen? If everyone is moving in this direction, how can Stugatz be right that the movie theaters are going to make any kind of vibrant comeback and not just be dead because now it's the rush? Disney hasn't caught up to Netflix, but they've sped up everything with Disney Plus and streaming. You got all of these movies going directly to HBO Max as Scorsese does his complaining. This is not the way that it's supposed to be. It's got to be on the big screen. I haven't studied it. And I don't know anything except what my experience is on this. But I think we've arrived at already the movie theater's dead. We just don't know it.
Yeah, because ultimately, the convenience of sitting at home on a Friday night and deciding what you want to watch, not having to encounter people, and you can just press a play button, and every movie in the world is just there as long as you pay $9.99 a month. Like, that experience has to be topped in some way. Just as, for example, you talk all the time about the Red Zone experience being way better than going to a game in person. Ultimately, the experience has to be better, and movie theaters have tried everything. They've tried turning it into restaurants, they've tried serving you wine, they've tried everything, and ultimately, people just choose, particularly post-pandemic, just be at home.
Stugatz, you have heard me say that with our addiction to the devices, one of the great untreated addictions in the history of humankind, that we are more disconnected than we've ever been, even as we're more connected. Go ahead and walk down the street and you will see people in their phones and you will see people taking pictures of their lives and editing it so that they could put it on their social media. But what is happening right now with the technological evolution is absolutely an isolation of people who don't have to interact with others that is creating a film of mental illness. Mm-hmm. It is a film of loneliness that you don't want to go out to the mall anymore to buy anything. You don't want to go to the grocery store to buy anything. You don't want to go to the movie theater to interact
with
people.
Well, you don't have to, right?
When you don't have to, if you're going to keep making it convenient, and I do think that people like Bezos are making a whole lot of money on making us lonelier. Making us as a people lonelier by making things so convenient and so cheap that you keep coming home and fighting with your wife because she's got a bunch of packages there again. Bezos is actively ruining your life.
Here's the business plan. Let's make them never leave the house.
It's fascinating that it's happening to us. We're all watching it happen as he shoots himself into space, as part of the country's on fire, part of the world is flooding, and we are more disconnected and lonelier than we've ever been, and it's all going into one man's pocket, and we're celebrating. Congratulations, Jeff Bezos, you did it.
I feel like this is the culmination of Greg Cody's Back in My Day, because all of Greg Cody's Back in My Days in some respects are about the inconvenience of convenience, right? That is probably the greatest through line through all of Greg Cody's Back in My Day, is that the inconvenience of doing something the hard way actually has some secondary benefits. And if we keep getting spoon-fed everything, the convenience of convenience allows us to disconnect from broader society.
Mm, the convenience
Greg Cody,
of convenience.
A visionary.
That was deep.
Mm. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm. Mm.
Huh.
Wow.
Whoa.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Libertard.
Enough with the DJ Khaled collaborations with people that are hot right now.
Yeah.
We want to see DJ Khaled work with some of the great singers of yesteryear. Can you imagine how great it would be if DJ Khaled started bringing out special guests onto the stage, and one of them was Bryan Adams? Hey everyone, it's Liza Minnelli.
Stugatz.
Barbara Streisand. Yeah. Elton John, it's your song. Andrea Bocelli. Another one. Tony Bennett. Frankie Avalon. Thomas Dolby is blinding you with science.
This is the Don Levitar Show with the Stugatz.
It is time for Stugatz to share his game notes. No one in the media will tell you what happened better than my boy Stu.
Dan? They were canceled last year due to a global pandemic. They probably should have been canceled this year because of that same global pandemic. But with a French victory over the United States in men's basketball, and despite the concerns of an emperor, Dan, make no mistake about it, the Olympics are back.
You love
the
existence of an emperor.
I really do. I want to be one. The Summer Games. Speaking of back, hello, NFL. Back, Dana. Very excited, are you?
Not yet, Stugat.
All right. Didn't see the United States-France game, but I'm guessing Tony Parker had a big night. Nelson Cruz will be playing baseball forever.
How old is he?
I don't know.
Is he 42? How old is that dude? How is he still hitting home runs?
He's still mashing.
Yeah. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Are you stunned that 400-year-old Nelson Cruz is still mashing?
He's 41. Like, imagine still being a missing piece when you're 41.
Still hitting home runs.
Incredible. Harrison Bader. Great head of hair. You know what the H in Harrison stands for? Head of lettuce. Rays adding Nelson Cruz. The rich get richer. Listen, Dan, you don't just walk into Evan Fournier's house in Tokyo and expect to leave with a victory. You know, slicing a bagel. Dangerous game. Being great at spike ball is more difficult than being great at football. Have you seen Spikeball?
I have not.
It's amazing. It's one of the coolest sports I've ever seen. I am telling you, they are so talented and so good at what they do. It's difficult. I don't think there's a player in the NFL I could see doing that.
Best sport ever, Stugatz.
It's Spikeball, right?
Amazing.
It's incredible. Amazing. Sport. The defense, right?
I mean, when they do the thing where they do that, they backwards against the thingy and then you run around and it goes backwards behind you.
Well put.
Unbelievable yep. play.
I totally understand what you're talking
sure,
about.
Sure, it's called the thingy.
The thingy.
Where yeah, but they do it and then behind you and then they run around and they hit it behind.
Guys,
you know what I'm talking
assume,
about.
Exactly. Yes, you're speaking my language. Spikeball.
Assume yes. we haven't seen Spikeball. Explain it.
All right, so there's
she just did.
Right. I'll explain it in terms perhaps you can understand.
Poorly, yes.
There are two rings. There's a tiny ring in the middle. You're using your hands. It's a tiny little ball. You have a teammate. You're playing doubles. They're spiking it. Now it has to hit the middle, that little circle, right? It has to hit that before it goes back into play and the other team can hit it back to you. It's crazy. It's like a weird volleyball.
It's like volleyball, but instead of going over the net, you spike it against the net and it bounces off.
Yes. Well put.
Thingy.
Is there anything more terrifying in sports than Kenley Jansen trying to close out a baseball game? Lightning Penguins to open the NHL season. I'm telling you right now, none of the players that take the ice for the Lightning in that game will be on their postseason roster. Not one. Go ahead. I dare you to be the reason that Tom Brady has to forfeit a game. Good luck. When I say to myself, I want a vacation in the Southeast, one of the first places I always consider is Oklahoma. Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC. The good news is we won't have to watch Oklahoma choke in the playoffs anymore. Want people to get vaccinated, Dano?
Yes.
Take away football, beer, and Carvel. Take it away. I'm serious.
I heard you saying that last week. You were trying to get off the ground that if all of a sudden people said that if you're not vaccinated, you can't have Carvel,
right,
that all people would be vaccinated.
Take away things that people really, really love and enjoy and can't live without. Football, beer, and Carvel. See what happened at Indiana University? They made it a policy that you have to be vaccinated to attend the school. You know what happened? Their vaccination rate went up to almost 100%.
Well,
that's it.
Well, that'll do it.
Don't give them a choice.
I mean, the NFL's
That wouldn't be America, though.
So you're anti-freedom, is what you're saying.
I don't know who else is a little uncomfortable with the NFL. Like, even when I root for you, the NFL deciding what athletes can put in their body, it makes me, even as I'm sitting here saying, yeah, everyone get vaccinated, I'm like, well, but not if the NFL says so.
Right, it's so funny when, like, everyone get vaccinated. What's everyone doing not getting vaccinated? Too far, NFL. You took it too far.
But you imagine if you took the witching hour away, how many people would get vaccinated? I think about it. I'm serious. It's a good idea. Also not American. Devin Booker. First Giannis, then Nando DeColo. Tough week. You know what the N in Nando stands for?
No.
Neds. I have it. Fuck that one in. Cardinals linebacker Chandler Jones has requested a trade. Guess it didn't take him long to get tired of old J.J. Watts. Flaming Watts. Idiot. It's the truth, though. Chris Middleton, do it in a big game. Kevin Durant, we're back to square one. To the man at the Sagamore Hotel who walked into the bathroom and announced, without breaking stride, that what goes in must come out.
Okay.
I love you.
You are him.
I am. Also, based on the sounds I heard coming from inside that stall, it didn't seem like whatever went in wanted to come out. It was pushing.
Okay, yes, we gathered, Stugatz. Thank you.
So hammer home the point.
Subtlety, Dana. Always a strength with you.
Also, I think the saying is, what goes up must come down.
That's right.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
That is correct.
Regardless, sir. I love you. Luke Longley is getting a two-part documentary on ABC. His account of the Bulls years.
Oh, come on.
I'm there for that.
Come on.
I'll take anyone's account of the Bulls years.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Will you take anyone's two-part documentary account of the Bulls years?
Death, taxes, and every 4 years, everyone becoming an Olympic expert. An annual tradition unlike any other. Odell Beckham eyeing the Super Bowl. Odell, how about you stop eyeing a Super Bowl and actually get to one? Thanks. Whatever.
Just you. You happened.
Sorry. Nibs. Great plain snack. Little nibs. You like those?
I do like nibs.
Red licorice.
I do like nibs.
Oh, it's so good. Damian Lillard. You had all the help in the world and lost to France. Dame time. More like lame time.
Oh, God.
It wasn't that we lost, though, Dan. It's that we lost to France. I want to be part of the Seattle Kraken.
That's it?
That's all I got. Like, it looks fun.
Play for them or what?
You just, Roy, it looks fun. I mean, the Kraken are having fun.
You want to be in their front office or what?
I just want to be a part of it. Front office. I'm above my pay grade. A U.S. Open victory sandwiched in between a couple of positive COVID tests. Quite the COVID sandwich for Jon Rahm. Bumper cars. Dangerous game.
What?
They really are. You don't realize it when you're a kid. Everything, you know, nothing's dangerous when you're a kid. Try those things as an adult, because I did. Dangerous. I got whiplash.
What?
Neck hurts.
Bumper cars, dangerous game.
This little kid, this rascal got me, Dan. I
mean, yeah, T-boned.
Two of them, they teamed up. I mean, these kids, they're experts at it. Bumper cars. Greg Popovich, if you can't handle the heat, get out of the kitchen. Pop. Greg Popovich, give it a rest. Pop. Now the French are better than us at two things. Basketball and being obnoxious. The final Sunday without football should be a national holiday. You agree?
No.
What? It's the final Sunday without football.
You already want to make it. Are you talking about Super Bowl Saturday? You're talking about...
Well, no, I'm talking about the final Sunday, which I believe is coming up this week, right? This Sunday is the final Sunday you'll have without football for many months. That should be a national holiday.
Oh, without football, national, just so that we could sit around waiting for football?
Yeah, that's what you do for the holidays, yes.
Okay.
Oh, God. Leonard Fournette, allow me to explain. There's this thing that is trying to kill you, and there's this other thing that prevents it from killing you. Choose the other thing. Just me, or does it feel like Deshaun Watson should have more important things on his mind than arriving to training camp on time? Missed it, Dan. Did Chris Paul use the excuse that his hand hurt after not using his to shake any of the Bucks? The C in Chris Paul stands for classless. People who jog uphill and judge those walking down the same hill go to hell. Speaking of hell, Art Briles. Dan, those are the weekend observations.
Don Lebatard.
Ron Karkovice beat Caminiti in terms of rugged hand?
I think so.
What about Derek Bell?
We're talking Karkovice and Ken Caminiti. I don't think Derek Bell is in that conversation.
Hal Morris?
How about Mo Vaughn?
Mo Vaughn might be in the conversation.
Mo Vaughn's a good one, yeah. But he doesn't have rougher hands than Hal Morris.
Yeah. Did Sean Casey have rough hands?
You know what? Maybe.
Stugatz.
Good take. My good strong take on that. You know what? It's usually followed by an opinion.
The mayor. I feel like the mayor had soft hands. I do.
I do too. I think baby soft hands. Baby soft hands. Gentle caressing hands. Yeah, I believe that too.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
We've been talking a lot around here during the pandemic about how bare naked the greed in sports has been to get to the dollars. You're seeing it right now in Olympic coverage that is in a bunch of empty stadiums, as Stugatz mentioned, the Emperor and Japan not having any choice over whether they can cancel the Olympics because the contract with the IOC makes it that you got to get to the money. And I have found it a bit inescapable that as soon as the players start getting money in a way that allows Alabama's quarterback to get $1 million in endorsements as a sophomore before he's taken a snap, that Texas and Oklahoma are like, bleep it. Let's go play in the best of the minor leagues. Never mind all the sis boom ba, all the tradition. Never mind all these things that we've held up as mattering for a long time. We're in a bogus conference, and let's do the Super League thing. We're just going to do college football Super League. Let's grab the most money. You see what's happening for a long time here, ESPN and just television dollars, as the rule book hasn't changed over many, many years in the distribution of those dollars. The dollars have exploded, and ESPN is increasing its hold on the sports rights business with very few competitors. And the SEC is the closest thing we have to the NFL. Texas and Oklahoma have held up a bogus conference for a long time. Why is anyone going to care about all of those bottom feeders in that conference the moment that Texas and Oklahoma leave? All of those teams that exist only to lose to Texas and Oklahoma.
Right. Well, now they have a shot, right? They have a shot at winning that conference if this goes through, and it wouldn't happen until 2025. It's going to be interesting. I have never heard, Smetty was saying this during the break, that she is upset about this because she loves watching Big 12 football. I've never heard anyone say that.
Air raids, Stugatz. Texas Tech with Patty Mahomes playing right. Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma. That was like one of the best games of the decade. And also, Dan, not to correct you, but I kind of have to. Texas hasn't won the Big 12 in 15 years, since 2009. So I guess 13 years.
Right.
Oklahoma has won almost every year since has won every year since 2015. And then TCU and Baylor. Baylor obviously had that run with RG3 in the early 2000s before the whole scandal happened there. But I think that this kind of sucks if you're a fan of any of the teams that are remaining in the Big 12, because now there's going to be a much bigger realignment. And the super conference thing has been floating around in the ether for years. And it sounds like that's what's going to have to happen, because now the Big 12 is completely weakened. And if you're trying to sell your rights in 2025 and beyond, who do you have? Like at Oklahoma State?
There's not TCU? Much there to get excited A&M, about, even though
they're in the SEC.
Oh, that's right. Jeez.
And Texas A&M they're pissed, and they should be pissed, because they joined the SEC so that they could be the SEC's Texas team and outbid Texas in recruiting. And now they're going to be probably in the same division of the same conference, which that's a whole other thing. Are they going to keep the conference, the West and the East, or are they going to turn it into the NFL model where there's four teams and four different like divisions or whatever? I don't know what's going to happen with that. But if I'm a Texas A&M fan, or even like anyone working at Texas A&M in the athletics department, this is like a huge backstabby move.
Not only is it a backstabby move in the name of let's go get our dollars, and not only is it a super league type of move, you've made it so college football, help me out, go ahead and add whoever it is you want to add here, but I feel like what college football is about to become is the SEC and Ohio State.
Well, Clemson.
And Clemson.
Right.
I don't know. I disagree. I think that like there's always going to be teams like in the Big Ten and in maybe the Pac-12 now. And Notre Dame should get mentioned. They made the playoff twice in the last 4 years. Unfortunately, for everyone who listens and hates Notre Dame, it's true. Yeah. There's still like other competitive teams outside of the SEC, but I think this is going to spark a bigger realignment. And there's probably only going to be maybe four conferences, four like Power Four conferences, and then everyone else is a group of five or something like that. I'm not really sure. And then I don't know what happens to the proposed conference or college football playoff 12-game. Playoff proposal that was kind of going forward now, because that was also predicated on there being five conference championship winners.
Are we going to see a day where like an 8-4, like 9-3 SEC team makes it over an 11-1 Big 12 team or something like that?
Well, the Big 12 could go the way of the American Athletic Conference, where they just don't get considered as a real conference. And so no matter what UCF does, they're not making the playoff because it's not considered a real conference. But I actually go slightly the other way in saying that if Texas and Oklahoma go into the most difficult conference, that makes that conference more difficult. That means you're going to have more teams that are 8-4 and 9-3. And even if they are good, college football is a sport that punishes losing of any sort. So the most you can lose is two games, and it's going to be really hard to run the table in that conference now.
But I think we should also mention like Texas joining the SEC is important because Texas is a huge brand name. It's not because they've been dominant in football in the last 10 years. Like, that doesn't make the SEC West that much harder, in my opinion. Oklahoma does. That is a program that has had three Heisman winners in the last 5 years and has made the playoff a number of times, even though, like Stugatz mentioned in Weekend Ops, they have gotten blown out a few times. But I don't think Texas joining makes it harder for Alabama to run the table.
I also think we've yet to really see how much name, image, likeness is going to change college football, because as it was, the major institutions had such an advantage, perhaps at least in part because they're able to pay players better than everyone else. We don't know, once this new economy has been created, how it's going to affect the sport and the decisions of recruits. Are they still going to go to the major power institutions, or are new ones going to be birthed because you can go make money closer to home? You can go make more money somewhere in one place that maybe isn't strong now that can develop. So I don't think that this hedge money is really intact as yet.
One of the dirty secrets about college football is that any given year, for real, there aren't but 15 or 20 teams that matter, and it's usually the same 15 or 20 teams without many outliers. And what's going to happen now is 18 of the 20 are going to be in one conference, or whatever it is. 16 of 20 are going to be all in one conference, with the occasional other, the occasional Baylor makes a run or USC makes a run. But you are going to, there is going to be the NFL, this next conference that is the SEC, and then everyone else that exists, just to sort of lose to these people.
You don't think it's a zero-sum game, though, Dan? Like, if Oklahoma goes in the SEC and they go 7-5, Oklahoma is no longer Oklahoma. Someone fills in the void of being 11-1.
Right.
You know?
7-5, you have Oklahoma and Texas being with the ability to recruit the way they've been.
I think Texas did that
recruit
in the Big 12. I mean,
yeah, Texas has been underwhelming for a long time, and Mack Brown is living off of what he did for Texas. What was that? Vince Young in Texas. That's the first time. But that's the first time they won the national championship in what, like 50 years?
Texas has had one 10-win season in the last 11 years.
And they're thinking that just by getting all of that money and getting into the SEC, that they will elevate themselves by being in that conference and competing. I mean, Mike Leach couldn't do anything there. It's early, right? Mike Leach and Lane Kiffin went to programs that are bottom feeders.
I mean,
there,
you got LSU, Georgia, Alabama. I mean, you got the best programs in the country, and now you're adding Texas and Oklahoma. It's crazy.
I don't know. I just think that, like, it's hard to judge what is going to happen when you're saying, like, there's going to be the NFL, the SEC, and then every other conference. I think there's going to be another shoe that drops with all of this. I think that the Big Ten is now probably going to try to add more teams and consolidate their power a little bit.
But the good teams are
competitive.
But the good teams, Jess, are in the SEC. I think that's Dan's point. You can replace Texas and Oklahoma. But
I just disagree with the premise that Texas joining the SEC makes the SEC harder to win.
This is not what I'm arguing, Jessica. What I'm arguing is that by, let's just say Texas and Oklahoma go to the SEC and it doesn't make the SEC any better. Let's say Texas and Oklahoma become Mississippi State and Mississippi. It still cripples the Big 12. It's just the relevance of those programs, the fan bases, the national interest in a sport that has mostly regional teams. Those are national programs, and now the Big 12 doesn't have one of those. Simply, there is not a good reason to watch Big 12 football the moment those two national programs, just like Clemson does that for the ACC, Texas and Oklahoma did that for the Big 12 just by existing as a national power, or the illusion of a national power.
I still think that there will be something that either the Big 12 will add more teams to it, and this is why it kind of sucks as a fan, though, because you're right, like, the part of the reason that Big 12 football has been fun to watch has been a lot of those rivalry games with Texas and Oklahoma that are now gone. They're not gonna be able to schedule those, and that's why there has been this has happened with, like, West Virginia joining the Big 12 and the Pitt rivalry going away. Like, this happens all the time. It's why it's hard as a fan to, like, really get attached to some of these rivalries, because they might just disappear in 5 years. This whole thing happened with basketball when the Big East blew up a few years ago, and it, like, that was a great conference, right? Like, Big East basketball was awesome. But Yeah, just I don't think that it's like a bad move if you're Texas and Oklahoma, because you're right. Like, the national spotlight of being able to play against if you're Texas, you'll probably be playing like Alabama, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU. Like, those are all games I would watch. There's no denying that.
What are the games
that
you're going to watch in the Big 12? Other than gamblers, what are the games that are going to be watched in Big 12 and regional rivalries?
It's always been, for me, the most fun stylistic conference. Like, if you just want to watch touchdowns on a Saturday, you watch Big 12 football. And I would presume that the programs that remain will carry that on, but it ultimately will feel inconsequential as, I don't know, Memphis playing UCF does, because it doesn't have any national title implications. These games have to have implications. I guess, but the question is, if the SEC is going to hoover up college football, does it hoover up your interest in the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12? Because the SEC feels like the only thing that matters.
You're saying Kansas and K-State's not a good enough rivalry for you?
No. No.
I mean, I don't know. I kind of lost my train of thought there. Your point was that, what, that you still like the style of Big 12 football?
Yeah, stylistically, like, it's fun to watch, but again, if it feels
it amounts
like
to nothing, but, though.
Right, exactly. If they're if they're bumped out of the college football playoff rotation, then it's meaningless football, but and you won't watch it.
But it won't be. I mean, depending on what happens with the college football playoff now, it kind of depends on a lot of things, but you can see, like, let's say the Big 12 adds Houston and UCF, just for an example. I just made that up. I don't know if that's going to happen. But you can see now one of those teams play for a spot in the national championship, or in the playoff, I should say.
I don't know if I want to see that, though.
But if they're good enough to win a conference, then they'll make it. And
yeah,
it doesn't matter if you want to see it or not. If they're good, you'll want to see it, right?
That's why I'm asking. I'd rather have the fifth best team from the SEC over whoever wins the new Big 12.
On what basis?
I think
on the logo?
No, yes, bigger brand, harder schedule. I believe they'll play a harder schedule than any of the Big 12 teams will play.
The part that to me, just symbolically, coming through this pandemic right after, you saw everything that happened with the Pac-12. You saw that they went for money more aggressively than all of the other conferences, and eventually everything got a little bit back to normal, and now we're in a space where college quarterbacks are going to get $1 million in endorsements to play, and Oklahoma and Texas are saying, bleep it, we want more money. And so all the things we've been selling you for years about traditional and tradition, regional pride, history, why it matters to be in a conference, amateurism, sis boom bah, to hell with it. We're going where the corporate CEO Nick Saban of college football exists, and we're going to, as close to professional football and professional dollars as we can get, no matter who we have to leave behind, no matter the relationships within a conference. I just find interesting that the veil has been lifted on amateurism in a way you've never seen before, that a pandemic has made it so we're not cloaking it anymore, disguising it in the fraud of sis boom bah. This is a .org. No, this is like, let's all go wherever we can to grab the money and let's stop with the nonsense.
Dan, they're essentially giving up an automatic bid to the playoffs. I mean, they're giving up an automatic spot in the Final Four, Oklahoma.
The reason to do this is money.
That's
period.
It.
Hard stop. That's the reason Texas and Oklahoma are breaking up with tradition, with history, with whatever it is that resembles amateurism in that conference.
But it is interesting, because if you have a team from your conference that does make the playoff, as it is right now with four teams, your conference gets a shit ton more money. And so they must be banking on the fact, which is not inaccurate, I think, that this next 2025 media rights deal with the SEC is going to be massive.
It's going to be a monster.
I think is really interesting, because I think a lot of people working in media have thought for a long time that these rights deals, like, there's a bubble that's going to have to burst at some point, because the deals are getting massive and cable is not important anymore to a younger generation. And so I don't know, like, what, Witty, what?
I mean, that bubble ain't bursting. Like, there is no evidence, even if the games have to move to ESPN Plus at some point, there is no evidence that bubble is bursting.
ESPN
None.
Is going to throw so much money at everything.
They did already. They bought out CBS.
They did, yes.
So,
they, They bought out CBS for that afternoon kickoff.
We should ask Skipper. I just saw Skipper wander over here. What that rights deal is going to land the SEC and the teams in the SEC, because it's why Texas and Oklahoma did this.
I love Clemson just sitting in the ACC being like, all right, we're waiting. Every year it's an automatic bid.
Yeah, go kill yourselves. go kill yourselves in the SEC. Let me hang out.
Ohio State too.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people think that this somehow means that Notre Dame will join the ACC full-time as a football school, because that will increase their next rights deal astronomically as well, because right now Notre Dame has its own deal with NBC where they make a lot less money to remain independent, and if they get a slice of that pie, whatever that is, compared to what the SEC is now going to get, how could they say no to that?
My question would be, though, is does it reduce your interest? Because you've been pointing out the greed of the NCAA and college football programs for two decades. So does it reduce your interest in college football? For me, my interest in college football has been reduced in the playoff era because it's the same six or seven programs every time. I don't know if this merger of Texas and Oklahoma with the SEC would reduce that problem or add to that problem, because I am bored of seeing Alabama, LSU, Clemson, and Ohio State in every playoff.
LSU is pretty recent, Chris. It's been three teams for a decade now. It's been three teams, and Oklahoma gets in or Notre Dame gets in, and you know they're going to get blown out, and then they do get blown out.
The occasional Wisconsin. The
occasional Washington.
Notre Dame covered in the
Sugar. Oh, get out of here.
Rose Bowl, so.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.